KFCF 88.1, independently owned and locally operated since 1975 in Fresno. My name is Dan Yassin. I'm an anti-war and anti-empire activist. Today is February 21st, 2018, third Wednesday of the month. Every third Wednesday from 3 to 3:30 p.m., I interview authors, scholars, bloggers, columnists, and activists who help us look at our world through the prism of American imperialism. On the show, we talk about U.S. foreign and domestic policies and the actions of the military-industrial congressional complex. These actions have severe consequences not only for the American people but also for the people in many other countries. To create a better, humane, and a compassionate world, we must first understand what is being done in our name, and we must always be willing to stand up, speak out, and speak truth to empire. Today, we have Ann Garrison. Ann Garrison is an independent journalist and a columnist based in the San Francisco Bay Area. Her articles appear in Counterpunch, San Francisco Bay View, Global Research, The Black Agenda Report, and The Black Star News. She produces radio for KPFA and WBAI New York City. And you cover so many topics in your articles, and I appreciate that very much. Africa is one of the topics you have covered very well. The exploitation of Africa and its resources began under European colonialism, and it continues today under American imperialism. Africa has been very, very highly colonized and pillaged and destroyed, and millions and millions of people have been killed to extract those resources. Then later on, after the end of the European era during the World War II, after that, the U.S. influence has increased. And it continues under George Bush. After 9/11, he's just declared global war on terror that has gone on as long as we are talking about the war, and that allowed United States to go attack any country anywhere as long as they can claim that there is a terrorist there. But that has continued, and in 2007 George Bush started what
created
is
AFRICOM.
Do we have Ann back online?
That's what you're gonna say. Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, I was trying to use the microphone to make the sound better, but I'm gonna have to perfect my use of that technology. So I'm going to sell.
Okay, I'm going to let you talk about AFRICOM. I was just trying to give a brief overview of what has happened in Africa for the last few hundred years, and now continuing under American imperialism and starting of AFRICOM. Tell our listener, what is AFRICOM and how it is used in Africa?
Africa is the U.S. Africa Command. It's the last of seven geographic commands that the Pentagon has established to establish global hegemony. There's also, I can't remember what they're all called. CENTCOM is the Middle East. PACCOM is the Pacific. EUROCOM, you get the idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there's also, they span the whole globe, and AFRICOM was the last one. There's also Space Command, Cyber Command, and AFRICOM has put bases all over the African continent, and one place to see a map of those bases is in Nick Turse's book and or Nick Turse's articles, which are published, Tom Dispatch, The Nation, and The Black Agenda Report. I think people know now that there's a drone base in Niger, and they're talking about building another. Mm-hmm. We know this. Most people didn't know this. President Trump didn't seem to know it. Most of Congress didn't seem to know it until a U.S. soldier was killed there.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing to understand about AFRICOM is that they have established a dependency and a political constituency by employing a lot of African troops. And these troops are paid so much more than they could make in their own countries that they create a middle class there, and a political constituency that supports AFRICOM.
Okay, AFRICOM actually was started under George W. Bush in 2007, but in the beginning, African countries were reluctant to deploy U.S. troops on their soil. But it all changed under our first African-American president, Barack Obama. Now we have U.S. special forces in almost like 33, 35 African countries. Tell us about the expansion of AFRICOM under Obama.
Well, it was pretty clear that this was going to happen, that the first black president was going to make Africa a lot more comfortable about the U.S. presence there. Even Muammar Gaddafi, who was ultimately murdered by the U.S. government, went to the U.N. in a speech he made to the U.N., and just really sad if we look back at it. He talks about how much he expects from this son of Africa who's become the U.S. president. And, of course, that was a tragic disappointment. I don't know what else I can say about the expansion, except that it's continuing. Africa is being militarized. There is an article that I still haven't had time to completely read in the Black Agenda Report this week, in which an author who frequently writes about AFRICOM talks about its failings.
Okay, I think before you came on, I had tried to summarize how it all started. Africa is very rich in minerals. And then, of course, oil and gas were found also. That is the main reason that all the militarization and exploitation of Africa has been going on. So you have written extensively about Africa's Great Lakes region. And besides Obama, both Bill and Hillary Clinton have played a big role in the death, destruction, and corruption in these countries. Tell us about Clinton's role in that region.
It was so destructive that the people I know from that region were relieved when Donald Trump, instead of Hillary Clinton, was elected. I mean, they knew it was bad for us, but they were just horrified by the thought of another Clinton in the White House. Bill Clinton escalated support of the Rwandan Patriotic Front, which invaded Rwanda in 1990 and waged a four-year war against the existing Rwandan government, which ended when they assassinated the then Rwandan president, Juvenal Habyarimana, and the Burundian president, Cyprien Nyamira, who were returning from Dar es Salaam. There had been other peace talks during that four-year war in Arusha. And then, after the president's murder, there were the 100 days of slaughter, which came to be known as the Rwandan genocide. And that is usually told, that story is told to the U.S. as if it happened suddenly and in 100 days, without the context of the four-year war, and also the assassination of the president has never been solved. There are competing narratives about why two African presidents were assassinated on April 6th, but it has never gone to trial. And the International Criminal Tribunal in Rwanda said, oh, they didn't want to try that. That's because they don't want to put the president of Rwanda on trial. He is a key U.S. ally and has been ever since they supported that war, which ended in the 100 days of massacres, which is not to say there weren't a lot of massacres before. Then the 100 days of massacres became an excuse for the Rwandan president and the Ugandan president to invade the Democratic Republic of the Congo in 1996 and then again in 1998. They joined some Congolese forces who also wanted to overthrow Mobutu. And the first president that they installed, the Congolese President Laurent Désiré Kabila, was not compliant enough with either U.S. interests or Ugandan and Rwandan interests. So they started another war. Rwanda and Uganda, with U.S. backing, invaded again, and that led to a really catastrophic loss of life. The only scientific study of the loss of life covers only 1997 to 2008, and that estimate is 5.4 million people, many of whom died in refugee camps of malnutrition or easily cured diseases because no one could get to them in time. And many of those were children who died of easily curable diseases. The Democratic Republic of the Congo is the most resource-rich nation in Africa. It's the heart of sub-Saharan Africa, the heart of Black Africa, and it's the most resource-rich. The greatest concentration of wealth is on the eastern border with Rwanda, Uganda, Burundi, also South Sudan, and Tanzania, but most important, Rwanda, Uganda, and Burundi. Uganda and Rwanda have served the U.S. agenda there since 1994, when Rwandan President Paul Kagame seized power. Right now, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, it's a really sad situation. The U.N. Refugee Agency has, or no, maybe it's the U.N. Office of Humanitarian Affairs, has said that this is a crisis as great as Yemen, Syria, and Iraq. Those are the four top humanitarian crises in the world right now. Congo gets very little attention because all of the great powers are happy with the status quo. There's a ruthless dictator, military dictator, Charles Kabila, the son of Laurent Kabila. Laurent Kabila was the one who was not compliant enough, and after he was assassinated, he was succeeded by his son, who has been in power ever since and has now exceeded his term limits. I don't think they ever had a real election, an honest election, but he was elected in whatever sort of election they had twice, and now he's supposed to be termed out, but he's just stayed in power. And that has caused a lot more unrest, and he is using the unrest to cling to power, just like any head of state can use a war to justify staying in office. And the reason this is going on in this really tragic situation is because all of the great powers and the large mining and oil industries, they're also agricultural interests, they have deals. And so they're happy with the status quo as long as their deals are sustained, no matter how much, quote-unquote, President Charles Kabila represses and attacks his own people. And this has been really bad this year in a region called Kasai, which is in central Congo. This was surprising because it spread out of the east, but apparently there are great resources in Kasai as well. And it's also been extreme in Beni, which is a territory of North Kivu province that is rich in many minerals, also in timber, and it's also a transit area from Congo to Uganda, and then there's a road that goes from there on to the Indian Ocean where resources are exported. It's a transit point for resources illegally extracted.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
In the Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo.
In your introduction, Anne had mentioned that you write on a wide variety of topics. So let's bring it home by the article that was published today, The Reckless Resistance, and you wrote that article following the Special Counsel Robert Mueller's indictment of 13 Russians. Give us your take on these indictments and what's going on.
How preposterous could it be that 13 Russians noodling around on the internet or even helping to organize a few Trump rallies, if that's what they did, swung the election for Donald Trump? Now, of course, the indictments don't say that they did that. But anyone who hasn't been watching Fox News and has instead been watching CNN, MSNBC, and the rest of the liberal extremist press is convinced that Russians stole the election from Hillary Clinton.
One more minute.
Okay. And also that they hacked. There's no evidence that either the DNC or the Podesta emails or any voting machines were hacked. It's only this claim that they tried to influence people on the internet. Well, I'm sorry, but that's been going on for a long, long time. That's what people do on the internet, and that's what they do in political campaigns.
And it's dangerous,
and those pushing this narrative, mostly the Democrats who are so angry that Hillary lost the election, are risking heightening tensions with Russia, the second greatest nuclear power in the world, and creating an argument for censoring the internet.
And we have run out of time. Thank you so much. Sorry we had some telephone problem, but thank you, and until next time.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You are listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on KFCF 88.1, independently owned and locally operated since 1975 in Fresno.